welcome to another episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, the podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. I'm your host, Pat Sorois. To let you know, we do two episodes every month here in our free feed. And if you like what you hear, you can get two more episodes every month by signing up for our Patreon at patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. We're also on social media. We are on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, all at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. Also, on our Patreon, we have ad-free episodes, and you get access to our Discord chat. That's really cool. And if you guys are having a good time and you're enjoying what you're hearing, go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating. Leave a review. That helps us get the word out. That being said, I am here today with, as always, with my co-host Kath Barbadoro. How you doing, Kath?
Hi, Pat. I'm good. I'm excited to have another guest episode.
This is big. This is big. We're out of our bubble in a huge way. We are here with, we say friend of the show to anyone right. who we know. Okay. So we're going to call you a friend of the show. It's your first time being on here. That's the lingo we use. But we have friend of the show, just legendary Austin figure, globe traveling comedian, and I should have learned the word stunt performer.
I've been calling myself a professional freak for 30 years.
Professional
now,
so. Freak. There we go. All right.
I feel that's the only thing that really covers the whole ball. Takes all those things and just makes it right there. Freak.
Professional freak.
I was going to suggest that to Pat, but then I was like, I don't know if that's like a slur to, to Eric's people.
I mean, you know, I've got freak tattooed on my chest.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, guilt-free. Yeah, hit
what
him with
is
it, baby.
I mean, is it something we can say, or is it something you can say?
Is that y'all's word?
You know, I've loved playing with that sort of idea, that sort of stuff. I mean, you guys have seen me do sets of stuff where I've referenced, because there are a lot of parallels, because what it comes down to as a freak is that you're other. And much like a lot of other words and slurs with freak is that there was kind of a reclamation of freak, and that really kind of goes back to the 60s, where you saw freak started to become a popular positive slang term.
Yeah.
That's where, because before that, calling somebody a freak was like, you know, how to start a fight, right? Yeah. It's like, hey, you freak. And like, who you calling a freak? And then, you know, the fists go up like Popeye and shit, you know.
Well, let's get the full introduction out here. Professional freak, right. The lizard man, Eric Sprague. Yep. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you. Hey, good to be here, man.
You've been a mainstay in the Austin comedy scene. Like I said, you also travel all over the world. We'll get into all that in just a little bit. But that's how me and Kath know you.
Yep.
And I think we were outside of somewhere one night.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't here, was it?
No.
No, we're outside of somewhere, and we were talking about the podcast, and I was like, I want to get you on sometime.
Outside the Valve.
Outside of the Valve. That's where it was. Yep. A few blocks from here.
Yep.
But, we wanted to get you on, and we wanted to talk today. Like, I just want to talk to you. I just want to hear a little bit about your story as well.
Right.
But we brought you on today because we've done a few episodes that brush up against carnival scams.
Right.
Of course, we did the episode about Jeff Jarrett. Kath did that. It was an excellent episode about Jeff Jarrett, the wrestler, who is like kind of throws back to wrestling used to be a part of the circus.
Right. That was a traveling wrestling show.
Yeah.
Was something that would often be part of a carnival. It's just in the structure. Like when you've got a carnival, you've got, you know, usually, you know, today you've got rides and food dominated.
Yeah.
Because it's a carnival is almost always a for-profit thing, unless, you know, even if it's a charity thing, that's the reason they do it, is that it produces revenue. It is geared towards that.
Yeah.
Every square foot of a carnival lot has to generate a certain amount of revenue at the end of the day, and that's where they're focused.
Well, and that's what that leaves a lot of room open for, like, the kind of stuff we love to talk about, flim-flam, scamming. And like Jeff Jarrett, he comes from a legacy. It goes all the way back to, like, his, like, family started out, like, the old school wrestling thing. So we want, I figure it's a place ripe for scams. Obviously, we're going to start off here with a quote, which I looked up. So basically, there's a sucker born every minute and two to take them.
Yep.
P.T. Barnum quote, but as you enlightened me to in our chat before the show, he never actually said that.
Yeah.
Which kind of proves the adage, but it seems like it's cast a shadow over, and not necessarily a bad one. People kind of know what's up. They go to a circus or a carnival. They know the carnival barker's a little shady, selling you on something. I think it's part of the thrill.
It's the modern take of it. It's the modern interpretation, because now we've seen the history. We've seen these guys. You know, you guys have a podcast dedicated to people who've pulled off these scams and these cheats, right? So they become legendary. People have become a little bit wiser to it. So you have to find a new way to take advantage of the audience.
Yeah.
You've got them hooked on the idea of scams and cheats. So you'd be like, oh, well, you like tall tales. You like scams. You like wondrous things. Well, I've got the most wondrous, the tallest of tall tales. I've got the biggest cheat. I've got something so diabolical, I'll tell you it's fake and you won't believe me. You'll have to, because you won't be able to figure out how. Yeah, that's the modern twist on continuing the legacy.
That's great.
I think there's a real like pleasure in being scammed in a certain way. I think I think people do like it. I mean, that I'm a pro wrestling fan. Like, I think that is some of the appeal, is like people in sort of they like to be like consensually deceived.
It's a shared fiction, and everybody understands if we all follow the rules of this fiction, it's going to be really cool, and we're going to have a great time. And it's one of the only contexts really where if somebody breaks those rules, you can really kind of you see the get turned on. Like it doesn't, and they people are very protective of wrestling fans in particular.
Still real to me. Damn it. I got ticketed.
I think there's like a I think sort of carny stuff in general that has a charm to it like that for the same reason.
Well, and that's the sort of, again, like we're talking about with Barnum now, we've got a quote attributed to him, which is perfectly in line with our modern understanding of who he was, but was not at all how he was seen in his own time. So when the legend outgrows the truth, you print the legend, right? So that's printing the legend. Mm. The printing the legend today of the carny folk and things like that, or you know, running away with the circus, that's very much, you know, more taken from movies and pop culture than actual reality.
It's something how like they say that the Wall Street, a stockbroker used to be a very boring job.
Right.
And like they would even hold that up as like, in like if you watch like old late night bits or comedian bits, that was a thing of like a boring guy as a stockbroker.
Yep.
And it was like, then Gordon Gekko came out in Wall Street in the 1980s. And they people who were in that period back then
cocaine, too.
It had everybody thinking they were real hot shit. And, but yeah, they were like talking about like it changed the tenor of the whole scene, because people were like, there was people coming in and starting out like, I'm Gordon Gekko.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
People coming in like, I'm going to disrupt this place. I'm going to fucking blow the doors off this.
Yeah.
Whereas before, people were coming in with long term. There were Warren Buffett, right?
You know,
Warren Buffett is an amazing investment, but he didn't come in kicking in doors. Right?
Yeah. It's a smart, sound investment.
Yeah, he rolled up and went, hey, this stuff always wins. It's not exciting, but it always wins.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, that's why it's not exciting, because it always wins.
Yeah.
Boring as hell.
It's a boring thing. There's no risk. So, yeah, I want to get into this. So, we, so carnivals, circuses, sideshows, freak shows, these American institutions, they occupy a wide spectrum in our public consciousness. Fun places where you can go with the family, see talented performers, train animals, do stunts. But, like we just said, it's also a place where you can get real drunk in a field that's usually vacant. But for one magical week, it's filled with lights.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fantasy. So I wanted to talk to you, really just kind of get into, because you're not just some guy that knows about carnival. This is like you've built an entire life and career and legacy out of this. So what was your introduction to that, to this world?
Well, I mean, I started off as sort of anyone does going after either, you know, if you're an 18-year-old and you're going into comedy, you've got all these dreams and aspirations.
Yeah.
And things like it's nothing like that at all. Whatever you're thinking, you're wrong. You know, it's, well, I was the same way, except for I was going after something that was a little bit weirder. And, you know, because it had nearly sort of died out, well, a lot of like the sideshow stuff in the 70s and 80s really sort of cratered because, well, entertainment as a medium had changed a great deal, and the logistics of traveling shows and what people would accept, like, and also you had a, you know, a smarter crowd. This was a growing phase, if you want to look at it that way, for these types of shows, where they had to figure out what the new audience was going to take. Kind of like we were just talking about with like, oh, you can't sell Barnum at face value anymore, but you can sell him as a master hoaxer.
Yeah.
Like that's that's how we buy him as a product, as a character now. And so much so it's colored most of our ideas about it. Yeah, we think there's always a scam, there's always a joke, but as Cass was saying, some people like to be scammed in a certain way.
Yeah.
And that's where you get where like the one-off showman, the people who do things like the 6-foot man eating chicken. Now outside, there's pictures of giant, you know, like fighting cocks with flames from hell and, you know, bodies and skeleton, whatever, all this to conjure up this idea in your mind of a giant chicken inside. And when you go inside, it's literally just a dude who's 6 feet tall eating a bucket of chicken. When you come in, he'll say, like, hi, how you doing? Smile. Like, and everybody's like, ha ha.
I bet that guy was 6'1". Bullshit. Right. Like,
the idea behind these shows and these, and it's even stuff like, you know, the Rat King, the largest rodent, the most fearsome rat in the world, trapped in the New York City sewers. You go inside and it's a capybara. And a capybara is technically the largest rodent in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is also the cutest little son of a bitch you're ever going to see, right?
Friend, like, to all animals.
So if you make it cheap enough and you make it clever enough, people will actually be your business model, and you want to let a few people in. You actually kind of want to let the secret out, because people will go like, oh, you got to go see it. You know, it's, and once you've had a trick played on you, what do you want to do? Play that same trick on somebody else.
I mean, that's
why I've, for years when I'm doing sideshows, especially when I'm doing like festivals, where there's kids and stuff involved, I do this little magic trick where I tell people, it's the one where you put your hands out in front of you, turn them over and interlock them, and then you check around the crowd, and then you put your hands back, and then you can untwist your hands, but they can't.
Yeah.
And there's a whole move when you take hands apart. And I explain that to people as, you know, oh, it's a little kid's trick, and you can play it on your kids when you get home. But the value of knowledge is not in its possession, but it's its application. If you go down to the bar tonight and challenge somebody to do what you do, or they buy the next round, they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Now you
got
to be smart about it, right? You got to win one drink at one bar, then you go to another bar, and you do it there. You don't explain it to anybody, or you can if you want before you go, but you just keep hopping around. If you do that right, you get free drinks the rest of your life. And, you know, that comes back to like where I first started really getting into scamming again. So I had this idea of, oh, yeah, you know, the carny folks, they know secrets, they know tricks, they know ways to get over on people. And, you know, I was not the, let's say, most ethical young man.
I'm not unfamiliar with that.
Yeah, right. So I was like, I want in on this. There's a shortcut. Yeah. I want in. You know, get me down there. What can I do? And you know, it turns out that the scam is really kind of built into the fabric of the business more so than what people think. But they found that it was a new business in selling people the stories about the games. Most of the stuff that you're told about is like how to rig a game. Is just, you know, sometimes there is bad equipment, but usually the risk of rigging the game is not worth the potential trouble, and also you're already making money no matter what happens. This is, you got to look at carnival games the same way you look at a casino, right?
Yeah.
They always walk away with the larger take. No matter how, if you can win the big dog, you can win whatever, they're always winning. So why are they going to risk fucking that up for a couple extra dollars? It's a risk-reward thing that just doesn't make sense. In fact, a lot of these things, if you think about it, don't make a lot of sense, like, because it is carnival, really, because it's, you know, we get carny, and you know, and that's a real slur. That's like, some people, there's not a lot of the old timers left, but if you call them that, they'll get angry about it, because they know that it was never said as a reclaimed term for them.
It never went through that reimagining.
And so, you know, they'll take that very serious. But again, in modern times, there's a lot of people like, oh, we're carnies, we're punk rock, you know, it's sort of falling into that sort of deal. But if you look at how carnivals operate, right, they hire a lot of local people for the help. So if you're saying the people who work at the carnival are scum, like, but aren't they you guys? Like, those are your kids, right?
Yeah,
they hire the local teenagers. Like, so your kids are scum is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, again, like I say, like, they wouldn't be doing a lot of this stuff that the story's like, I'm not saying it never happened, right? It's kind of like urban legends. It happens once, and then everybody claims it happens all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you drew the parallel to comedy earlier, like, you know, with me, like, we all know about that. You get a comedy, go to open mics. What's the entrance? What's the foot in the door? Who do you go and talk to? Who do you?
I advise a life of relative isolation. So yeah. I was in upstate New York, like, even when, like, so the town I grew up in and graduated high school in was 1,500 people. 1,500 people, like, and very close to people always ask me about Letterkenny, because they've heard my stories about where I grew up, and it's on the border of Quebec.
Yeah.
And I was like, Letterkenny is actually what we called the city. Those 5,000 people, that's where I had to drive to a half an hour away to get groceries. So there's winter up there. I grew up in a log cabin that my mom and dad built. So, and getting snowed in, it's a genuine thing. And if you weren't snowed in, your neighbor was, and you had to go help dig him out. That was your whole day. Like, people's like, you know, how many snow days would you get off from school? It's like, as many as we needed.
Yeah.
As many as happened, sort of
thing. Yeah, that wasn't a day off. That's, you know.
But
Snow day isn't actually a day off when it's a legitimate snow day. You need to go.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fight for survival.
I feel like y'all, because Kath is, you were in New Hampshire. You know what I'm saying? So it's like upstate New York, New Hampshire. Yeah. I mean, I just regionally distinct.
The Northeast in general. Yeah.
We were just talking about this the other day, Pat and I, so I want to give a PSA to our listeners. Shoveling snow is really cardiovascularly dangerous. Yep. So
people die every year.
It's really, even if you feel like you're in good shape, if you have to shovel, go slow and don't try not to raise the shovel over your heart. It's like people die from it all the time. That's my my PSA.
It's ridiculous that we laugh about it, but I'm like, dude, I could you literally like open up the paper and like, well, who died shoveling their fucking driveway today?
Man, I've been shoveling a lot at work because
that's why I told Pat. Yeah. I was like, don't lift the shovel up, Pat. Yeah. It's bad for you. Yeah.
But no, so anyway, the point of all that being is isolation and time by myself. And I was a very young reader and a nerd from day one, and so I just gravitated towards sort of weirder subjects, and Karate Kid was a big thing when I was about that age. So I was born in 72 and went through a martial arts thing, and this was when the martial arts still had a lot of bullshit surrounding it.
This was the
heyday for the guys that, well, I have a technique that could kill you from 15 paces, but I won't use it.
I remember when you'd hear those things as like a 13-year-old kid, you just repeat them and be like, yeah, dude, like my friend's uncle like studies that stuff, and he could do like a cartwheel and kick you with his left side of his leg. It's just like,
That was big when I was growing up, for sure. Yeah. I thought that was like a very common way that people died, was someone just like poked them with the right three.
Accidental Dimmock. I wanted to know how to kill people with a five-finger, but I wanted to know how to be able to balance on swords. I'm literally one of the people that I'm the reason you get those warnings on TV. when I was a kid, and now as an adult too, because I'm the one doing it on TV. But as a kid, that warning was there to tell me, hey, dumbass, don't try and do this.
Yeah.
But because I was a nerd and I had a lot of spare time, and both my parents were teachers, I had access to the school library, I would just go research the hell out of anything I saw that interested me. So fire manipulation became a big one, and also we heated our house through the wood, so I always had a fire to play with. Our furnace it really amazed me when I ended up in what was to me at the time a city, Albany, New York.
the bustling metropolis of Albany.
But I was there I was in grad school at the university there, and there's a lot of students come up from New York City and go there because Albany State.
Yeah.
And so many of these people had never really experienced fire in any way other than a campfire and were so deadly scared of it.
Yeah.
When I could pull out a torch and run it up and down my body and stick it in my mouth, like I was blowing their mind. I literally had girls fainting. And this is 95, 96. And in my mind, I had one of those sort of like, not really conservative, but sort of like, I guess more like rural and urban sort of thing, where in my head I was such a hick. I was like, these freaking people are so divorced from reality, they don't understand fire anymore.
That's very true.
Before we go any further, I want to like talk a little bit about what Eric does in case our listeners don't know. Well, first of all, if you're not watching the video, he is green.
Yeah, you guys are going to want to watch the video.
He's tattooed like a lizard. You've probably seen him on Ripley's Believe It or Not or something if you're around our age. He's green. But, Eric, you also do fire eating, sword swallowing. I've seen you put, like, forks in your nose. You do suspension stuff, right? Yep. What am I missing?
Well, there's a lot of things. Like, when I try and do the list, I miss stuff, too. Because when I set out, and I actually don't advise this as a goal, but it was something that worked for me and it ended up being a gimmick, was I wanted to be the first one-man 10-in-1. So the classic sideshow format is 10 acts in one. You buy one ticket, you go inside, you sit down, you see the show, but you get 10 different acts. Yeah. So I wanted to be 10 acts unto myself. So, you know, the first one, I'm a tattooed man. I'm a modified Marvel. I've modified my body in different ways. And then, you know, I don't really do this one much anymore, but human pincushion and threading needles through different parts of my body.
Is there a reason you just get bored with it, or does that have a shelf life?
I think it kind of has a shelf life for some people. I think for me, there were a couple of things that were at play is that, number one, there's only a certain type of crowd that really wants to see you shove a skewer through your body, right? And there's a significant portion of that crowd that doesn't have your best interests at heart. They just want to see someone do something horrible to them. These are the guys at every wrestling match screaming for a cut job every single match.
You know,
all they want is the red
sadists.
mask. And You know, so it's a little bit that. And it was also for me, it was like I did it so intensely. And that's what a lot of people don't realize about doing sideshow acts, and including some sideshow performers, because modern age, a lot of people get into the groove of, oh, I go and I do a show a night. Right?
Yeah.
Well, there's the grind show is the tradition, where it's actually my favorite way to work. But you can't, there are some acts you can't do in a grind show. Do them 20, 24 times in a day.
Yeah.
Back to back to back.
Yeah.
And, you know, or, you know, back in, you know, sort of the golden age, there are these stories of these guys, you know, the cycling acts. So they'd be like, oh, well, I'll be the fire breather this season.
Yeah.
And then I'll take a season or two seasons off because you're putting so much poison in your body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a microdose, but it builds up over time.
Yeah. Dude, sure. I did a show at Spider House last night, and I got off stage, and this nice lady was talking to me about just, you know, stuff, and she was like, oh, I do fire dancing.
Yep.
And she would show me her little fire dancing videos on Instagram, and I want to sound real cool to her, so I mentioned that I would be interviewing you tomorrow. Yeah, and then her boyfriend came outside, and I was like, oh, all right. And then I went and got Arlo's. Right. So, but yeah, so we have 10X and 1. We have
right, so, yeah, the demon pincushion, and so think about fire. So fire was my first real stage act for a sideshow act that I ever did, and just naturally, like I said, playing with fire and getting into it. But I hardly ever do it anymore because it's kind of a liability, and you don't get the best situations for it. Also, you know, in 96, 97, I could legitimately claim to be one of the technically best in the world at that time, because that's all I did, right? I just go in my backyard and play with fire. And as it became less and less of a money driver for me, it became more of a liability than a profit.
Yeah.
I started to, okay, well, shit, I got to write my shows and structure my shows without it. Just let it go. But if somebody requests it, I'll do it. In fact, I think the last time I actually did a legit fire performance was in 2015 in Malaysia, because the show that I was doing specifically requested it. It's on YouTube somewhere. It was actually a great show. This basically, the David Copperfield of Malaysia decided he was going to stop doing live TV events. So his retirement show, he did a competition. It was him and a street fakir turned TV fakir over there named Limbad versus an Australian and an American. So it was me and my buddy Space Cowboy from Australia. So we had to go there and do acts. Fakir is basically somebody who does sideshow acts, but more traditionally, it's the tradition it comes from. It's India, Pakistan, like that sort of recent street performers. So people walking on blue glass, hot coals. You'll see them in the streets, you know, the same people that are doing things.
They
like,
reference that in Aladdin, Prince Ali.
Yeah.
They pronounce it fakers. Yeah. It's 40 fakers.
Well, depending on how you want to play with it, it's either unfortunate or fortunate that the word fakir is so close to faker, and what they do, people think is, it's just a odd, language happened that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too, that, like, I think we should sort of establish right away is, like, we're talking about conning people and stuff, but, like, the things you're doing, the stunts you're doing are real. Like, it's the same with, like, wrestling and stuff.
But there's a relationship to that. If you get into, like, so if we talk about, like, scams and gaffes and cons in sideshow, there are people who have faked acts, right? And there's, for many, in fact, for a very short time, I tried to sell this act, the show that I had written up that was Magic versus Sideshow, where I would do the magic trick version. Like, there's a fake needle through arm that Harry Anderson invented that's great, right? It's a lot of fun, and you don't actually have to stick a skewer through your body.
Yeah, and always a plus. Right?
So I would show him that, and then I'd be, and now this is what it looks like for real. And that was basically, that was the whole show. It's like, this is what a fake sword looks like going down your throat, because it's not going down. This is what it looks like for real. That show was not popular. It did not go anywhere. I think it was a little too inside base. Like, magicians and sideshow people loved it.
Because we're all
actually friends, and we get the little references. And the regular audience was just like, why does he keep doing everything twice? Why is it grosser the second time?
Our podcast listeners would like it for sure.
That's We got the audience for you, man.
But
Anyway, I keep diverting. So we have tattoo. We
were just trying to lift
stuff.
Like I said, like I kept going through the bed of nails, straitjacket escapes. We mentioned flesh hook suspensions, walking on broken glass, walking on burning coals, eating glass,
eating bugs. Is there a secret to walking on breaking glass other than just be careful?
Well, here's again, like I just said, there's a way you can fake it, and there's a way you can do it for real. Now, sometimes some people get real nitpicky about where that line is drawn. And I feel like, look, there's adjusting the probability of you getting hurt and no chance whatsoever. So I figure if there's no chance of you getting hurt whatsoever, then you're probably cheating or you're using a fake version. Walking on broken glass, here's the thing. You can just walk on broken, and it comes down to technique and luck. Like I've done it, and through no fault of my own or the universe, anyways, I've ended up cut. And other times, you know, and most times, not cut at all. But if you really want to just play with broken glass and have almost no fear, because it's not 100% chance, but like a 99% chance. We used to take and you break all the glass up, right? You put it in big canvas duffel bags, like Slurpee Army bags. You throw that in a dryer or a washing machine, and you basically make a giant tumbler, and you tumble the shit out of it. We used to have in a show I was doing in Australia at this theme park, we had a kiddie pool full of broken glass, and we would throw a girl into it. She'd belly flop. and people would lose their mind. And bits of glass are flying, because people will see that, they'll be like, careful, it's careful, it's glass, it's glass. They'll be like, and they'll just give it a tap, and they'll be like, oh my god, it's real. It's also smooth, like it's a marble, man.
It's all the optics at that point.
There are things like that. And again, like you get somebody doing a ladder of swords, let's say. Now you can cut. Penn and Teller had a great bit on this about how you fake knives on stage, where they were cutting up a banana with one. And he goes, look, on stage, you can cut a banana with a banana. And he proceeds to chop the banana with a banana, like, because it's a pre-chop thing. There's an easy gimmick. So it's like, if you want to make something appear sharp but not actually let people investigate it, doesn't take any trouble at all.
I never thought, when somebody goes, hey, see this knife right here? This is sharp. And they start chopping stuff.
Yep.
Never once occurred to me the vegetable was pre-chopped.
Right.
this whole time, I was been like, shit, that thing's
sharp.
It
also just doesn't have to be, like, if you look at, like I say, like ladder of swords and machete beds are notorious for this. The person always has a cucumber, right? Now, that thing has been sitting in a cooler. It is crisp. It is ready, like any amount of force. And what they're doing is, it's just, you know, it doesn't have to be that sharp. They are swinging for the fences. If you look at their arm, they're not just like, tick, tick. Because if it was really sharp, it wouldn't take much effort. They're coming down, and you look at it, half the time it breaks. Because a lot of people, and I, you know, I'm not going to call anybody out, because it's just, it is what it is.
We're here for the smoke on this podcast.
But yeah, there, a lot of people use, you know, blades that are basically stairs. They're not sharp at all. And it comes down to an individual performer's sort of, you know, how crazy. I also know people that take, you know, huge unnecessary risks, where I look at them and be like,
right,
dude, there's doing the stunt, and then there's just seeing if you can get hurt for fun, you know?
That's interesting. That makes a lot of sense, that there's sort of a spectrum, and it's like, there's a difference between like completely faking it versus making sure you're not 100% certainly going to die.
I wish I could remember who it was. I can kind of narrow it down to a couple of people in my head, but I don't know exactly who told me this. And it was early on for me. It was like mid to late 90s. And I'm talking about stunts and acts. And this is the point where I'm just starting to build up my own versions and, you know, see how extreme, find out how far I can go. Like the first time I put a skewer through my cheek, it probably took me 15, 20 minutes, like staring in my own bathroom. And then I got more and more comfortable with it till I could do it on stage, right? So you gotta build up to a lot of the more extreme acts. And the person, might have been Todd Robbins, but whoever it was, they told me, they go, look, you can't compete with crazy. Like at the end of the day, you are a wannabe artist, entertainer, trying to make a living, who has limits and ideas about responsibilities. You are never going to win a competition with an actual lunatic, and there are way too many of them out there to discount that situation. That's another reason why, like I said, like, why don't I do certain acts? I'm like, well, because look, if people want, like, what I did, it when I sewed a button to my arm in 95, that was extreme. That was horrifying. That was, you know, people running from the room, and now it wouldn't barely get you booked, So it's like, I'm not gonna escalate the way that some people are escalating.
Yeah.
Stunt inflation.
So in your so we, one thing I want to get out of the way. So we talked a little bit about the distinction between circus and carnival.
Right.
And you summed it up in a way that I liked. It was one's trashy, one's classy. What's what are the politics behind that?
I think that it comes down to a couple of different factors, and not the least of which is sort of circus attitude.
Because
circuses are much more of a built up sort of family legacy and a long term. Because if you think about what's involved in a circus, right?
Yeah.
And it clings to, and remember, circus started in Europe, and that's why you have the rings, the equestrian rings. You'd have horses were the main act.
Correct.
And the way that American circus kind of differentiates from that is going to one big ring and having more animal and variety acts like that. But the history and the attitude that is there is one of, this is, you know, not necessarily aristocratic, but it's a higher social occasion. That's what's going on there. And it's about the show, and you're going to see performers, you're going to see world-class performers. Carnival is kind of a budget, hey, you couldn't go to the circus, or, you know, we need to do something to break up the time here. But it's more about, you know, the food and, like I said, nowadays the rides. But historically, the shows that were there were more catering to, and this is the other way that people sometimes look at it, is that circus sees itself and is seen as a noble pursuit. Like the church can go to the circus, right? The church goes. The carnival caters to your
you're being a priest that hangs out at a carnival. Fucking run!
The circus caters to your higher aspirations. The carnival caters to your base needs.
Okay. Right?
The carnival's where you're going to get gambling. You're going to get sex. You're going to get thrills. You're going to get, you know, they say the rides and stuff like that. It's, and that's that, again, that sort of aspect that people have about, and it's just, I think it's a pop culture thing that grew out of it. And it's, the distinctions are kind of weird anyway, because if you look back there as a practical matter, again, you know, when you start thinking about this, you're like, that wouldn't really make sense, because people had to move between these worlds and do it. Now, sure, there were cases of, and this was in the right time, you know, 40, 50, well, no, more like 70 years ago now, that would be a good way if you needed to get out of town quick. But that's the other thing, with the romanticized bit, people are like, oh, I'd love to join the circus. Oh, do you like shoveling shit? Because when people ran away and joined the circus, and it did happen, right? You didn't just get to be a clown. You didn't just get to go on the highway or they didn't train. Those are families of generations. They don't let outsiders in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the other thing, that the circus is very much a closed, just to get to, now the carnival is more like, you know, thieves against the town, but where it is more of a, hey, I don't trust you, but I don't trust them more.
Yeah,
so, or we're in this together. We're on the same lot, you know, type of thing.
So, my mom, the neighborhood I grew up in, the Rabbit Fest came to Copper's Cove. It was ran by Crabtree Amusements, and my mom's neighbor ran off with them and just came and was like, "Debbie, can you watch my plants while I'm gone?" But one thing that you would put me onto, and I don't know if this would be more in place, I would say this would be, now that we just drew the distinction, I want to get into something like the scams, a little bit of the games. Yeah. And something you put me on that I went to learn about, that I thought this was great, was a jam auction.
Jam auction.
So you'd find a jam auction probably at a carnival.
Yeah, yeah. Jam auction. See, and that's the other thing, because the circus is, proper business, and the circus owners were big businessmen. You got to remember, the circus was in deep with the railroads, because that's how they traveled. And the circus had a huge amount of influence. When a circus came to your town, businesses shut down, schools let out. Yeah. It was the local economy booster.
It was, especially
before TV, it was everything when the circus came to town. The carnival was something that was more, a little more slapped together, depending on the operation. Again, there's such a wide spectrum of this. It's hard to actually come up with a decent stereotype, because everything's going to fall apart when you look at the details of it. But yeah, you've got, you know, the circus, it comes in, the circus, you know, brings all this stuff to town. It's a bump up, it's a booster. People from all over come to your town to be there for it.
So this is what we're talking about.
But the jam auction, it's definitely, it's more of a carnival
thing. See, and, it has carnival vibes.
I've seen it done as street performance.
Yeah.
Literally, where people are doing,
I can see that.
Somebody rolling up on a pitch and opening up a case.
Yeah.
And just boom, going for it.
So here's what a jam auction is. A jam auction a longtime listener to our Soapy Smith episode, where he was doing where he's selling bars of soap in a big bowl, and you can pull out. You heard of that, Soapy Smith. Yeah. So for the people at home, a jam auction is a stage auction that one would normally find in a circus or carnival. It offers insane deals on supposedly pricey items. Also, listeners would know the scam about the high-end speaker systems that you get for $20, try to sell at a pawn shop, it turns out they're worthless, or actually several hundred. So these jam auctions will have things like a grooming kit that looks really good. It's like a comb, a brush. It'll also have like a wristwatch or a handbag or something. Things that look really nice, but are actually only like $2 or $3 a piece, if that.
Or straight-up knockoffs.
Too. Or just straight-up knockoffs, So basically, the one that I saw, I watched a video of one happen.
Okay,
it was pretty
interesting. There's a couple of good ones on YouTube.
Yeah, this one was two auctioneers. They pull up and they stand in the back. These guys were in a box truck.
Yep.
And they pull out. Behind them in the truck are high end electronics or other valuable goods. That's where you see like your PSPs, your Blu-rays, your big screen TVs. These are all behind them. At least the boxes are.
It's called the flash.
That's the flash. Okay. Yep. So that's the flash.
And when you see a carnival game, the big dolls, like I said, that's the flash.
Yeah, the ones you'll never get.
Yeah, the ones that nobody wins because they're not even. It's not that they're not even winnable. It's like they're not even on the scale. You could get absolutely perfectly. Oh, you got all three. You could choose from the third shelf. What's on the fourth? What's on the fifth?
Oh, that's right? The flash.
It's the flash. It's just there to drag you over.
Yeah.
And that's it. So you're walking by box truck, big screen TV. Hey, I'll go see what these guys
are. Yeah,
bunch of people outside milling around.
Yeah. So they begin to auction cheaper items like grooming kits for $1, all while saying they retail for more. These sell for $5. If it's $5, these sell for $15. The first purchase is small. It's Storage Wars. Yeah, it's very Storage Wars.
It's literally the same. It's the same shit that the guys at Storage Wars say. They're like, "Oh, I get $20 for this all day. I get $30 for this all day.
Yeah.
You won't get $2 for that."
Yeah, no, not at all. And so the first purchase is small, but it comes with an oversized bag.
Yep.
And now you have a bag in your hand. And what do you put in the bag? You put it more stuff. Yep. So a plant. Usually there's a plant in the crowd.
Yeah.
And a plant in the crowd buys one.
A lot of plants.
Yeah. It feels like that's a whole other.
Well, if you want to talk about like scams, especially for circus and carnivals, like shills, shills, plants, whatever you want to call them, they are massive, and it's in every stage of the game. It can be getting tickets sold for a crowd to get moving. I mean, I've used it. It's not usually the straight up like, hey, I'm paying you to be in the crowd. It's normally like at a festival when I've got a crowd and things are a little bit slow, and somebody I recognize that's seen the show before comes by or like wants to be a friend of the show, be like, hey man, you coming to see the show again? And if they're wishy washy about it, like, look, I'll let you in for free, but here's the deal. I need you, when you hear me say this, that's when I want you to start walking towards there. He's like, stand back with the rest of the people and watch the outside valley that I'm doing. But when I give you a cue, head over there and do it. And actually, I've been doing this one festival for 9 years where it got to the point where families would come up and we'd be out there talking. They'd be like, when's the next show? And they're like, okay, well, come back. Let us know when to go.
Because
the line matters. Like, we would even get like our friends when they would stand next to the box office, but in a line. Because I said this in London for years. I was like, trust the queue.
Trust the queue.
My partner would be like, oh, maybe we should hold off the show, see if we sell some more tickets. I'm like, when the queue goes in, that's when the ticket sales begin.
Because people
see them going in, they go, no, and that's when I kick into gear. No line, no wait. Don't hesitate. Come over here right now and get your ticket. The show's going inside. Once those curtains close, no more will be admitted. Make sure you're on the inside and so you don't miss our bona fide survival.
I haven't had to do that in a while.
It's
so cool.
I'm trying to get into my flow again for it. I am out of practice.
So a plant in the crowd will buy an auction. It will buy an item to get it going. The auctioneer thanks the purchaser by giving the item and then returns the money is a big thing of it. They go, hey, that'll cause more people to purchase. Yep. And then they train them almost like a dog. They'll have a phrase where they'll ask, hey, who's happy? And everybody says, I'm happy. And they say, I'm happy. And they get the money back.
Yep.
And it's like, hey, you're happy. I tell you what, now you're even happier. There's your dollar right there. There's your $5.
Yep.
So this causes more people to purchase. Purchases then escalate to more expensive items, but each round sees the money return when the crowd says they're happy, and everybody's waiting for them to get to the flash.
Yeah.
That's when they're going to start selling the PSPs. That's when they're going to start selling the – I say PSPs because that was on the video I watched.
Right.
That's an old piece of electronics. Yeah. I understand that. But so then by 3 or 4 items in, the crowd has continued purchasing, getting their money back when they say they're happy, all while hoping that the laptops, iPads, and phones will be next. Finally, the auctioneers present a slightly more expensive item like a watch. It looks nice, but it's actually cheap. They'll pitch that for $20.
Which is basically every watch, though, because watches are a scam in general. Like, just so everybody knows, the watch industry is a fucking scam.
100%. So the crowd who they'll pitch that for like $20. The crowd who's now initiated into the rhythm of the auction will buy it for $20, and then the auctioneers will ask if they're happy, and the crowd will say yes, anticipating a refund. And the crowd will go, well, if you're happy, our work here is done. And they pull down the gate of the truck and they drive off
and fly out. Yeah. And there's a few, like, that's a good basically. So you, the, when you watch the, there's basic versions of it, but there's, it's been spun off. Like I say, this is one of these ideas where it's been co-opted into the fabric of, you know, kind of anything you do. I don't know the guy's name, but I know this story about the Tropicana, which coincidentally is going to cease to exist or about to exist. Yeah, it's been done operations for a while. I think they're scheduled for the demolition.
That's
but,
like 9/11 for degenerates. Dude.
For me, that was one. That was the first place I ever stayed in Vegas, the first time I went in the 90s. And so they had this little area, right, where if you'd been playing, you get a certain amount of tickets to use the machines in there. And that machine, every machine is a winner, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you're going to get some little thing, some little gift. And but so the upsell, so these mugs that say Tropicana on them were like the low end sort of thing. And I sort of watched the person, and there's a dude in there, right? And I'm watching him for a little while. I'm like, he's doing a jam auction. What is it? It's like, yeah, keep playing. You can buy more tickets for these machines when you use up the ones that you've earned in order to get a better chance at the next round. But don't worry, everybody's at least getting the Tropicana, the four Tropicana beer mugs. Yeah. And I'm like, and I'm looking at those beer mugs, and in my head, this is when I just started like printing merch and whatever, because that was something I wanted to have. I'm like, I'm selling T-shirts now. A beer mug would be great. I should have a Lizard Man beer mug would be fantastic. And I'm going, yeah, they're the Tropicana. They probably print 10 to 20,000 of those every couple of months.
Yeah.
Like, just trying to working out the price points for things. I see. I was like, a $24.95 value? No fucking way. You know? And that's ultimately, like we talked about a little bit before, and before the show, was that the real scam here is that the games can't lose. Right? Because even if you win, it's not like you paid $3 to win a stuffed toy that cost them 25 cents because they buy in bulk. For that.
Yeah.
And this goes all the way back. This has always been the whole thing. And it's always been, like I say, that reason of why would we cheat you when we're going to get your money anyway?
Yeah. So I did want to get into some of the games because, man, this was cool. I've really enjoyed this. We are a lot further along than I thought. So I wanted to ask about – so we have a few of the regular ones. And I wanted to share a story. I have been scammed at a carnival.
Okay.
Having when I was 15. Kath, have you ever been scammed at a carnival?
I haven't been scammed, but I did I have this memory of I went to Disney as a kid with my family.
That's the big boys in that game.
Yeah, we were, God, talk about ripping people off. And people willingly wanting to be ripped off Disney. Yes. But I went to Disney as a kid, and we were playing some carnival game. It was like the you toss the rubber things on the bottle necks or whatever.
Like a ring toss,
Yeah, like a ring toss thing. And my brother ended up winning, and he won this... It's like the type of thing that would be flash. Like, it was this huge stuffed snake. It was huge. It was probably 10 feet long and like maybe a foot around, like a foot in diameter. And my parents were so fucking mad because they had to figure out how to bring it home from Florida on a plane. And like my brother was like 4 years old. They couldn't not bring it.
Have you seen the Wheelie Mammoth episode of Bob's Burgers? If anybody's seen there's an episode of Bob's Burgers where they basically, Mr. Fish Odor turns the kids into his little army of counter carny games. He teaches them how to beat all the crooked games so that because he's in a feud with his partners, and there's a little sub story. But anyway, that the actual stuff in there about the game, about how the games are rigged and how to win them, and the whole point of the Wheelie Mammoth, which was the giant flashy toy that was it, nobody could win like that. And they break it down all really, really well. It's probably the best sort of easily accessible quick explanation of it. But the other thing about that is that's again, and I think we mentioned this a little bit before, is the how the games can be rigged is a business in itself. What happened, and it's usually what, you know, if you look at these books, right, it's like former carnival games master or former tells all the secrets, exposes all that. That's just his gimmick to sell books. That's
all. Like, so he's scamming on the scams.
Third order
scamming.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, the scam is I'm going to scam you into thinking you're learning a secret scam.
Right.
Yeah. Dude, that's been I got done on the throw the ball in the bucket, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Man, I can't say it now without putting the backspin on it, because now that I'm older, I realize the guy's doing the little backspin on it. But I'm walking by. It's me and my friends. We're like 15. We have our skateboards with us. Easily the coolest kids in the county. And we're walking by this fucking booth at the Rabbit Fest in Copper's Cove, Texas, put on by Crabtree Amusements. And we're going by, and this dude who like looked kind of cool. He looked like he could have been a skater or whatever he is, goes, "Hey boys, we got some skateboarders out of that. You gotta come in here." He goes, "I got in my trailer right now, I got this. We're not putting them out yet. We're going out later. It's a brand new Tony Hawk deck," mm-hmm. which if you skateboard doesn't really make any sense. He would say a birdhouse deck or whatever. He was like a brand new Tony Hawk deck. But my stepmom had just given me $30, and I had $30 on me.
He found the right person.
I was just a big pigeon.
Pigeon, Mark, Rube, Yokel.
Yeah. And so,
did you notice a big white chalk mark on your shoulder afterwards?
No, do they really do that?
Yeah, that's why it's one of the legends behind calling people marks is
tried to look this shit up.
if you do your fellow con artists a solid for it, you like when you've taken enough out of the guy, you don't take him completely broke because then he's gonna get mad anyway. You always want to leave him a little bit. Right? But as you pat him, you put a little chalk in your hand, you pat him on the shoulder, and then if somebody else walks through the crowd, sees a little chalk on the back of somebody's shoulder, he goes, "Oh, this guy might be my next one.
This guy's stupid." All right. He got in there and he showed me. He threw it in. It landed right in the bucket. I go little underhand toss. And he keeps getting me to double down. And eventually, I lose all $30. And I'm walking away. And like my friend was like, "That was so stupid, man. You just lost $30." And I was like, "I don't care. Yep. My stepmom gave it to me." And he was like, "Yeah, but you don't have $30 anymore." And I was like, "Yeah, that is a part of this, but still, I don't care."
twisting the knife for you.
Had this is $30 in like 2001 money. Yeah. Like this was
well, the other thing, like you said about him doing the little flick and it going right in the whole thing. Like, you got to remember that these guys, and well, they're usually kids, right? Like the last time I did a Six Flags, was up in New Jersey, and actually stayed in the cabins underneath the roller coaster for the Halloween season. But the rest of those cabins,
exactly the worst fucking room in the house.
Right? Well, they shut it down at night, right?
So, it's
there was famously like an apartment under the Coney Island Cyclone for a while.
Right.
I think the guy who like ran it lived in it or something. It was. Yeah.
Probably.
That's right.
But anyway, so the rest of the cabin, the reason they were there was they were for seasonal staff, and they would fly kids up. A lot of them were from the Caribbean, a lot of Jamaicans, a lot of Dominicans. That doesn't matter. But so they've got them running the games in the park. Now, they're there. Like, I had to go in, like, go to my stage, like, 2 hours before the opening, which is fine. Go in and get set up and relax like that. They're out there at the games already. The gates aren't even open. So what are they doing? They're playing the games. You are up against somebody who can make an impossible shot. These dudes on YouTube that are doing, you know, they're doing that for they're doing that for a couple of hours before their shift and afterwards. And during they're telling kids, like, "Look, no, it's easy. I'll do it. Look, I'll do it backwards. I'll do it sideways." Like, and then that starts kicking you in the pride. That's the other thing is that, and this is something I've really always loved about it from the beginning, like drew me to it too, was the psychology of it. And sort of to me, the highest level of that is the dunk tank clown, which you don't think about. This isn't a scam, right? It's like, no, you give them money. They give you balls. If you hit the target, the guy goes in the water. There's no soft target. You don't hit it and he doesn't fall. There's none of that. But what's really going on here is, and the best of them, when you see them, it's just amazing, is they're calling people out. They're getting people so angry. They're getting them worked up. They're getting more and more. They're like, "Come on, put me in the water again, big guy. What do you got? Can you do it again? Yeah. Bet you can't do it again. That was a fluke." You know, some of them just, you know, they just look at people and just immediately know what will needle them. And the classic story, well, it's the jackpot. This is the circus carnival when you're telling stories about something that happened. It's cutting up a jackpot.
Yeah.
So the classic jackpot about the Dunk Tank Clown is, and again, I'm horrible with the name, so whoever he was, well-known in the business back in the 50s, 60s, he's in some little town, and he gets this guy, he comes up, and the guy puts him in the water, and he just starts needling him, and he starts talking about his girlfriend. The guy keeps more, and he gets you dumping him in the water and dumping him in the water. And then part of the story is that it's late in the season, so it's starting to get cold.
Yeah.
And he starts climbing up, and he just, you know, he gives up. He's like, okay, you know, screw it. I'm sorry. Sorry I said that about your wife, blah, blah, blah. And the dude just keeps putting down money and keeps dunking him over and over and over again. And, you know, so it ends up the guy gets pneumonia. And the dude who's throwing comes back to the tank, and he says, where's the other clown? He's like, no, sorry, man. He got pneumonia from, you know, being dunked in the water so many times like that. He's like, good. You tell him never to come around here before like that.
Yeah.
He goes, well, who was that guy? And he goes, he was the pitcher of the local baseball team. And he's up there throwing. Yeah. So the story is that this great dunk clown gets pneumonia.
Yeah.
And this guy, but this guy would come back day after day just to dunk him.
I guess like that there, you got to be like a roast comic. You got to be an insult.
That's
comic,
essentially what it was. Just that people, I mean, and we like to, again, like we have this idea of, oh yeah, it'd be like being a roast comic. It'd be so wild. Yeah, I figured out.
Yeah.
But in that actual situation, it degenerates pretty quickly to, hey, fatso, your girlfriend's ugly. Right. You know,
they you can't throw all like a gems.
Yeah, you throw like a 6-year-old girl. Like it gets real.
Struggling to climb back on the little platform. Very with a piece of shit.
Very problematic. Very quickly.
Yeah. We're getting close to the end here. So I want to ask you about two things.
One
of them was so this is about games. This is from a Texas Monthly article, and it's about just they kind of hung out with the guys running the games at a carnival. And cool little lingo here. The midway, is that like that's like the
it basically all these terms generally describe where you are on the path to the so in a traditionally a sideshow is a sideshow because it's on the side.
Yeah.
And the midway is the big road that basically goes all the way down to the big tent, the circus tent that's there. So this would be in a circus out. Now this is where things get muddy, right? But a sideshow could also show up on its own at a carnival. And work, especially if it was a freak show. And the difference between a freak show and a sideshow basically comes down to, are you doing acts or are the acts not that freaky, like juggling or something, hand balancing, contortion, stuff like that, versus do you have freaks in there? People who dislocate their shoulders and swallow swords and are completely tattooed, you know? People who are unfit for civilized culture. Like
it
used to be the difference between, the difference between a sideshow and a freak show was, like, you'd bring your family to a sideshow. Freak show,
Have you ever heard of the rat wheel?
Yes.
Okay, so can you explain a rat wheel to us?
So is this the gambling with the rat wheel?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, if I'm remembering this right, it's a lot like what I saw more of in growing up at carnival stuff, which is chicken bingo, where you've got squares and
it's
wherever.
Like chicken bingo.
Wherever the chicken shits, that's your bingo, and you call that. So with the rat wheel, wasn't it that there were different holes? And you bet on the hole that the rat would go to. Which opens up the possibility of baiting the rat to the hole that you want as the operator. Yeah.
Man,
that's one of those things too, where you got to chicken shit bingo. We all know is an actual thing, but the rat wheel. I mean, I don't doubt that it was done, but the other one is how common are these sorts of things? Because people will come up with these weird gambling stuff, and you're like, wait, did nobody have a deck of cards? What the fuck is going on?
This seems pretty elaborate.
We're going through a lot of work here.
Well, they were saying they had to start policing carnivals for gambling because they became dens of gambling.
Well, again, because the carnivals would play on your inequities, right? Say the base urges. That's where you're going to get like a girly show. Or like, you know, in the daytime, it's the authentic native Hawaiian hula performed in Oklahoma for the first time ever by the blah, blah, blah dancers. And then after about 8 or 9 p.m., it's the hula la. And, you know, and again, like, it's, of course there were some criminals. Of course there was some prostitution. Of course you had this going on. But you also, like I said before, you're drawing from the local elements too. Everybody's on the inside in the take. Basically, the carnies, the sort of the banding together aspect was of that, because it was kind of like we don't have anyone to watch our back. If the townies get out of line, the cops are going to come show up for them, even if we bribe them, which was often the case.
Right.
This is just business as usual in that respect, where you're a big event coming into town. You're going to have to grease some palms, whether you're Taylor Swift at the event center or you know, coming in, there's some greasing going on.
Yeah. Well, that's
right.
That,
I mean, like you said, like the people in carnivals in particular are like often sort of people who are attracted to sort of being outsiders or whatever, but they're going in and they're going into these towns and it's like they're the idea is, oh, they're coming to like rip off the town or whatever. But it's like, but the town all knows each other. The town the town could lynch these people. The town could, you know, like they have their own power structures and authority and stuff.
It's,
so like
it's
these people
much,
need to stick together and, and let each other know about these things.
It's very much like any, like you said, like that, the parallels, it's like, I don't like, there's parallels between me being green and someone else not being white, but there's nowhere, it's nowhere on the same level. Right. Same thing with Carter's, like, look, there are parallels to any other persecuted minority for the carnival workers who come into town.
Yeah.
But it's not on the scale. It's not institutionalized.
It's not institutionalized, Well, that leads me to the last thing I want to ask about, and this is something that I had heard about, and I wonder if there's any truth to this or if I'm maybe getting a little bit wrong. You talk about carnies banding together, defending each other. Yeah. I've heard there's like a catchphrase that can be yelled, and if somebody yells it's fucking go time on anyone who's not a carny.
It's hey Rube.
Hey Rube.
And if you hear hey Rube, fucking duck and cover, because somebody did something wrong. And it's one of those things where, and that will vary a little bit by where you are. I've spent enough time in Australia, but there's, you know, sometimes it's not even,
what do they say in Australia? Wiggity boo or something.
it's more like, in Australia, everything is tone, right? So cunt is everything.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what it is. Like that cunt could be your food. It's like a John in Philly, right?
It's
everything. But, you know, there's that one tone that's like here in Hey Rube, and you just look for the nearest stick or supposed to be the tent stake. Grab a tent stake and start clubbing anybody you don't know.
Oh, that's so tight. I love that.
I mean, I've seen not in like a festival setting or anything, like in the classic carnival setting, but I've had that happen on tours.
Yeah.
Where basically, you know, a bunch of tour guys out or in the middle and just been like, all right, if you don't recognize somebody from the bus you sleep on, punch him in the fucking face. Let's go. Like, we've had I've been out on tour and been in bars where, this one I'm trying to remember. It was St. Louis, and we were, I was there to start off the 2004 Fall Jägermeister tour, and it was headlined by Slayer.
Sounds so sick.
Yeah, well, it was Mastodon, nice. Killswitch Engage, Slayer,
and
we always had a local opener on there. But we got to St. Louis and immediately found out that the start date had been pushed back a week. So we were supposed to play on whatever Saturday. So I got there on like a Thursday or Friday for pre-production and all the meet with the lawyers bullshit and all that. And then like on Saturday itself, they're like, no, it's going to be next Saturday because that's the soonest we could get the venue again and do it. I forget what there was, random production issues, whatever. But that put a bunch of us at the beginning. And the worst thing, I say this as someone who's, you know, done a fair amount of touring and absolutely loved it. You never give tour guys more than 2 or 3 days off in a row, much less a week, and you don't do it at the start of the tour where there's literally nothing to do. There's no like backlog of work hanging over that anybody's going to use to keep themselves occupied. So we just start roaming around like fucking feral dogs, this fucking like all the techs for Slayer and stuff like that. We went to this bar one night because the owner, and we're not going to correct anybody's mistakes, right? The owner thinks that we are with corporate Jaeger, like my tour manager, my poster hangers, me and my stage assistant, when really we're just, you know, the independent contractors that get to ride along and play Rockstar with a corporate credit card. And he's like, yeah, these guys are from Jägermeister, we're gonna come in here. They had us judge their wet t-shirt contest, which turned into a booty contest, which turned into a bar emptying brawl. And so like I'm literally on stage.
People were not happy with the winners of the contest.
Yeah.
Very upset.
I to this day I have no idea how any of this shit started. I'm on stage with a couple of my bus mates up there and we're watching these girls get fucking water poured over their heads and wet t-shirt, and the tops are coming off, and all of a sudden the crowd is fighting, and we're like, what? And the fight is just growing bigger and finally we like be like, okay, girls can go, there's a little side room for them, we're like put all the girls in there, and we're on the stage, and the fight comes to the stage, and now like for the next I don't know how long we're getting bounced around the whole room, just like, okay, stick together. Finally we get, you know, everybody just starts flying out into the streets, As we start to get up, the cops are showing up, crews are showing up. The owner comes out, grabs all of us for behavior, starts throwing us back in the bars. It's because we're like, I've been kicked out of a lot of bars. It's the only time I've been kicked into one. Dude was like, get inside the fucking bar, get inside the fucking bar, pulls us in with a stab, slams the door shut. We're just standing there, we're just like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Like, what just happened?
Yeah, man, hey, room. Dude, you know, I think that's what we're coming towards the end, man. Eric, thank you so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure, man.
I think I was going to ask about, and no, I just hand it off to you, dude. You took us on a ride there, brother. Well, shit, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much, Eric. This was really great. I do.
Thank you, man. It's good to see you.
Before we go, I would like to ask one more thing. Can you just leave us with one more piece of carnival slang that you think we should know?
Carnival slang. Well, here's the carnival slang. If you want to try and bluff your way through.
Okay.
Is you got to be, and with carnival workers, we're with it, for it, and never against it. Is the show, is the carnival's lot, right? So like if I was bringing you guys with me to go visit somebody else's show, as we're going in the back, it might be, yeah, this is Pat or this is Kath, they're with it.
Yeah.
Except for, here's the key, is that you don't say with it. You can't pronounce it, but it's with it.
With it.
With
like
it.
WIDIT.
He's
with it.
He's with it. He's with it.
Like that.
So it'd be like,
thank you.
And the call,
also.
The call and response would be if somebody challenges you, he's like, you with it for it and never against it.
Boom.
Nice.
That's sick
like
as
that.
Hell. We should all start talking more like carnies.
Which I mean, it's the funny thing about it is like, I love hearing it brought back, but the reality is anybody who ever took it seriously is long dead. Nobody's actually doing it. Like, look, on a modern carny lot, somebody's be like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get.
Damn. Well, hey, Eric, thank you so much for coming on, man. We had a blast talking to you. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to put out there, plug, or throw out?
If you're in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, I will be there on April 13th doing the Saskatoon Tattoo Expo.
Nice.
Other than that, I'm going to be mowing my lawn. My wife and I bought a house.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so I'm learning lawn care at the moment.
Yeah.
That's my exciting new stunt coming soon. Lawn care.
You'll find something to do with that lawnmower, I'm sure.
Yeah. You're just trying to think about it. He'll pull it over.
Can we grow weed in our backyards in Texas yet?
No.
I would never do that. That's it. Drugs are bad. Psychedelic mushrooms can be a part of the round.
Hey, man, thanks again for coming on. Make sure if you're in Saskatoon, go out there, get tatted. You'll never match our man, though. Guys, if you listen to the audio of this, go check out the YouTube channel, because Eric has put a lot of work into this incredible appearance that he has, and you're going to want to go take a look at it.
This is my scam. This is my scam to not have to ever work a real job. What's the best scam you've ever heard of? Lizard Man.
There you go.
It's a one-off.
Well, guys, Kath, you got anything for us? Yeah, we're going to be out for, I don't know when this is going to be out, but it'll be
I don't think this will be out until early May, unfortunately. So hopefully you went to see Eric at the
Saskatoon
Tattoo.
Actually, in that case, June 20th, I'm trying to think what's after May. In June 20th, I will be in New York City presenting with a lecture series about identity, and it's a lecture that in the fall we're taking to Princeton.
Wow.
So there you go.
Cool.
I'll do my highbrow upcoming stuff.
Let me know when that is. I'll come out.
It is June 20th at Nine Orchards, which is the hotel and event center for it.
Yeah. Very cool.
Awesome. All right, guys, we'll go out there and see that. Kath, you got anything coming up?
I don't know what I have in May. Follow me on social media at Kath Barbadoro. I'm kind of off Twitter right now, but I'm on everything else.
Yeah, guys. I'm on Instagram at PZTX, PEEZYTX. And guys, thanks for tuning in. Worth it. We always discuss the scams are worth it at the end of the day. Yep. Totally worth it, but the best. Go ahead and check us out. If you like what you hear, we do two more episodes every month on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. You get access to our Discord, our entire back catalog, and commercial-free episodes. You're going to want to check that out. Also, follow us on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. And you can also, if you really want to support the show, the best way to do it is to go and just leave us a rating, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends about us. Guys, thanks for checking in. Thanks for listening. Be safe, be smart, but above all, don't get caught.
Don't get caught. See you next time.